The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Welcome to theflypod.com. I'm your host, Gary Puckett. My guest on today's show is Dr. William P. Sawyer. He is a medical doctor specializing in family medicine. However, he is also the creator of a very valuable and effective disease transfer prevention program and a character known across the country as Henry the Hand. This very basic yet highly effective program has been presented to more than 110,000 students nationwide. Henry the Hand has met with more than 150,000 public health and healthcare professionals and adults. Henry the Hand even has his own theme song. Wow, even I don't have that. We're going to have to look into that. I promise to play the song for you later in the show, but let's talk with the person who is the driving force behind this program. Welcome to my show, Dr. Sawyer.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
It's great to have you on. Let me ask you, what initiated your interest in creating the Henry the Hand program and character?
I am a solo practice family physician, and what I do for a living every single day is teach prevention and education. Doctors are educators. We really are teachers. And one of the key issues is going through practice and is your hands. Your hands were touching everything. And first started practice, I had my office staff put Xerox copies of their hands up on the walls, and we called them germ weapons. Here's how to protect yourself from the diseases. This was 19 years ago. And then I had children a few years later, and we used to bring them to the office, and then when they were about a year old and they were pulling the charts out of the stack, we had to send them off to daycare, which notoriously is a cesspool for germs. I was challenged, and I thought, I'm not going to let them be sick as the other children in the daycare. So we started this little hand awareness program. And Henry the Hand, we used to have a little sock on our hands and get them to wash their hands. And when they're very young, they didn't really know what they were doing initially, but they were in the habit of it. So we used to do this as they'd come in and around the kitchen table in the kitchen. And anecdotally, it worked very well. They were less sick than the other children in the daycare, as well as the other children in the neighborhood. As they aged and we saw the other neighborhood children who became a little more aware of it as they came over to Dr. Sawyer's house, we said, what a great concept. And we created a curriculum, built a costume. And when Henry went to schools for the first time, the kids packed around him. He was mobbed. And they have not forgotten Henry. So it was really quite a message. We've been sort of doing it ever since, one hand wash at a time, but it's worked out very well.
It's fair to say then that this was a collaborative effort as opposed to you doing this, pardon the pun, but single-handedly.
Right, exactly. It's really, we had, when we created the program, we had teachers, engineers, professionals, all kinds of folks from all walks of life who had put together ideas on this. And Henry the Hand was a creation I had sort of going through. And so you mirror the curriculum with the image, and then things started happening from there.
So how long would you say the formal Henry the Hand program has been in existence?
I would say we, quote, came out of the closet, if you will, probably 1998. Then we went to the first American Public Health Association meeting in 1999 to raise awareness for these public health officials. So the school events had sort of started a little bit before that, but very slowly. So I would say 1998, 99 is when we really sort of geared up for activities.
Well, it's my understanding that the program is based on four simple rules, all aimed at reducing the spread of common diseases. Could you explain the program and exactly how it works?
Sure. They are called the four principles of hand awareness. And hand awareness is a very interesting concept. It's knowing where your hands are and what they're doing at all times. So the four principles are, number one, wash your hands before you eat and when they're dirty. Number two, do not cough into your hands. Number three, do not sneeze into your hands. And number four is, above all, do not put your fingers into your eyes, nose, and mouth. So as you hear about this, it's about hand awareness, not just hand washing. It's do not cough or sneeze into your hands because they become vectors for transmitting disease. you do not put your fingers in your eyes, nose, and mouth, because that's how disease gets into your system on your mucous membranes and makes you sick. Germs, if you will, or flu, bird flu, are not wafting through the ventilation system or the stratosphere. They're on some surface. And then you, by yourself, inoculate yourself. So it's not in the air, and you don't have to worry about breathing it in as you walk through an airport. It's you put your finger in your eyes, nose, and mouth and gave it to yourself because you happen to have touched the surface where somebody else had contaminated it with their own hand.
I'm not a medical person, but like cold germs and flu viruses, when they're left on a surface, how long will they stay alive?
Yeah, alive.
That's the right word.
Yeah, that's a great question. There's lots of research around that. And then one of the very famous individuals is Chuck Gerba, Dr. Germ, out in Arizona. He really has done the research on surfaces and how long germs.
Is that his real name?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, how appropriate.
Yeah, yeah. He's a character.
He didn't have any choice but to go into that, did he?
So he has done a lot of research on surfaces and how long they stay alive and what are the most contaminated surfaces. So they can stay alive anywhere from 2 to perhaps 24 hours in different environments, and all it's based on is sort of the hostility of the environment. Is it dry or it's moist? Is it cold or warm? And so because germs love to grow in a moist, warm environment.
Well, that's why they like these mucus areas.
Absolutely.
Then, huh?
It's a wonderful petri dish, and they grow and grow and grow.
Well, having heard this description of the program, it really sounds quite simple, but recognizing the high degree of its effectiveness, why don't we hear more about it from organizations like the CDC, the Center for Disease Control? We're always getting warnings from them.
Right. That's a great question. I would say the CDC and prevention, that's also their name, should potentially be giving us a little more education on how to prevent disease. But we certainly do hear more than enough information on fear and scaring, if you will, of the public for the disease and the next pandemic or the next illness that's going to wipe out countries or states, and they're going to quarantine people, and which scares the public, who are our patients, to death. This isn't really answering your question directly, but I really am not sure why the CDC doesn't say, hey, let's practice the four principles of hand awareness. And you will absolutely reduce your chances of contracting.
It seems like it's such a simple, straightforward, easy to instruct method. And education should be a big part of their effort. I mean, in my view, as a taxpayer.
Absolutely. I would agree with you. I have certainly communicated to many of them, and the CDC, many of them clearly know about the four principles of hand awareness, because as they will promote in their flu prevention campaign, for instance, last year when there was a shortage of flu vaccine, they talked about each of the bullet points of the four principles. And the critical one that they added last year was do not put your fingers in your eyes, nose, and mouth. So there's a movement now, and it's in fact the AMA, the American Medical Association, who has endorsed these four principles of hand awareness, and the American Academy of Family Physicians, who have endorsed the four principles of hand awareness, for them to ask the CDC to begin to package the four principles so that the public hears a consistent message and it's more likely to stick, if you will, and perhaps change their behavior, the human behavior, such that we reduce these illnesses dramatically.
The spread of them.
The spread of the disease, because it's a very cost-effective way to...
What would be some of the germ-laden environments, like a public restrooms, shaking hands with people? I mean, what are some of the strong areas?
Well, the areas that you should be most concerned, I mean, that, for instance, in your own kitchen, it can be the sponge, it can be the faucet handles. In public arenas, it's the faucet. If you look at what do people contact, it's the handle on the bathroom door. As you go out, it's the sink handle, because many people, if they didn't do it quite correctly, it's doorknobs, it's in public areas, it's railings, it's the backs of seats, and whether it's an airline or it's a bus or it's another vehicle where people have coughed or sneezed, for instance. Lots of surfaces like that you just don't anticipate.
Well, on the process of washing your hands, And I do find myself doing this more often, being in the public a lot and shaking a lot of hands mm-hmm. in a lot of circles. I find myself washing my hands more frequently, and I don't know what started it, but it's happened. Maybe I'm just a little older and I'm a little more cognizant of it, and aware of it. But how long should a person really lather their hands up to?
It's 15 to 20 seconds is what it is. As long as you rub all surfaces of your hands, between your fingers, backs of your hands, your wrists, and with a good lather, and then rinse them with running water, that will work very effectively. Under your nails is another area that has been missed tremendously, because as you look at in bathrooms, there are very few times will you see a nail brush. So how do you get up under the nails? It's only with a nail brush, primarily. There's a few other techniques. And so that needs to be addressed more carefully to raise the awareness. And what you're talking about, you have a higher awareness about the possibility of transmission of disease. What you'll find is when you become more aware of this and you wash your hands more frequently, you will be less sick, because your chances are your hands are cleaner, relatively cleaner than they were before when you were washing less frequently, regardless of the type of soap you use. That's the other debate that you'll hear more about, antibacterial versus plain soap. Reality is you're going to have many medical societies reacting to the antibacterial soap because it will lead to resistance overall in the future. As antibiotic resistance is becoming an issue, that will become an issue as well. So it's really just plain soap, good lather, friction of all surfaces, and rinse them off, and you're a champion hand washer.
Well, can you give us some information or statistics that kind of give the listener a reflection on just how effective this hand washing program is if we use it, as opposed to not using it?
The program itself, again, if it's not just about hand washing, it's hand awareness, such that it's not contaminating your mucous membranes.
You did say that. You did say where we're putting our hands.
Right. Exactly. And so that's primarily the largest issue. In my office, for instance, I could wash my hands 110 times a day and still go home sick if at the wrong time I put my finger in my eyes, nose, and mouth. However, if I never put my finger in my eyes, nose, and mouth, and no patient, for instance, directly sits within 3 feet of me and coughs right in my face when they're contagious, I won't catch anything. That's a rare position for people to be in, within about a 3-foot distance, and somebody's acutely contagious, except maybe if you're a doctor, maybe a dentist. But you notice how dentists all glove and gown and they're protecting themselves as well as the patient.
Yeah, anymore you can only see their eyes.
Yeah, exactly. So if you use it, it's very effective. And there are programs and studies that will show that just by washing in schools, elementary schools, 4 times a day, it reduces absenteeism.
So most of this has to do with the germs, the virus being on a surface as opposed to some airborne.
Correct.
Okay.
Right, exactly. And that's one of the issues. You know, they start in Asia, they come across on the airplane, in the ventilation system, enter the States, and next thing you know, there's a pandemic. It's really not in the ventilation system. It's on the armrests, the back of the seats, the people carrying it. I say, as anybody gets onto the planes, let's wash our hands, wipe them, and then let's not put our fingers in our eyes, nose, and mouth, and we'll all be healthier.
Let's sit there and be just good passengers.
Exactly.
Mind your business here. Right. Well, any place where there are young children are congregated, it seems that you have an increase or an abundance of colds and flu. Why is this?
It happens. It's young children. They're developing their immune response. Now, the interesting piece about it is, you know, human behavior, it's a learned behavior. And so as you grow up and kids are exploring things with their hands and touching everything, they're touching everything, including their eyes, nose, and mouth, and they're sucking on them. And you'll see parents go neurotic over trying to keep their fingers out of their eyes, nose, and mouth. And some may have accused me at some point of acting that way at times. But if you're diligent about it, as they age, they will catch on better. The interesting piece about this program, frankly, is it's an adult program. This is really training children, but we have to retrain generations of adults who are teaching children inadvertently that it's okay to put your finger in your eyes, nose, and mouth because just watch them. Or it's okay to cough or sneeze in your hands because just watch them. Because, hey, 20 years ago we were taught, and 30 years ago, cover a cough or sneeze. And it always came out with your hand many times, not
sure, yeah.
Cover a cough with a tissue or your elbow or anything but your hands, because that's what we heard mom say, if you will. So we have to retrain the adults so that moms and dads today train their children correctly so that their children then train their children again.
Well, obviously, children learn by what they see as opposed to what they're told.
Right.
But at what age should parents, preschool workers, kindergarten teachers begin presenting and emulating this Henry the Hand rules and habits?
Yeah, the interesting piece from the adult perspective, we should be doing it now.
Yes.
Every single day.
On our own.
On our own.
For ourselves.
To protect us from whatever's out there. And if I say, I would always say, if we all had enough self-preservation, we would never put our finger in our eyes, nose, and mouth knowingly, because we could give ourselves something that could be a devastating disease. And you've heard of all of them, and the avian or the bird flu that's you hear about on the news consistently, that's a problem. So start now, teach, and then when the children see you, they see you practicing correctly, and they learn it by example the correct way.
Well, what types of training programs, exhibits, or demonstrations do you offer to schools?
Well, there's different levels there. There's a coloring book curriculum that we have on the website that you can download, frankly, make many copies or post or give away for the children to use in school, take home, put on the refrigerator, share with their parents, grandparents, friends, family, guardians. So that's a very simple one. Then going to the school itself, there are puppets that we have, Henry the Hand puppets that can go to school, small ones that fit around in circle time for the young children, preschool, kindergarten, first grade. Then there's a big costume, 8-foot-tall character, goes into for a big auditorium or cafeteria display or performance, which gets the whole school together, which is will never be forgotten. So there's lots of ways to do this.
You know, in researching, doing a little homework before our interview today, I'm seeing a website that requires maintenance. I'm seeing promotional efforts and campaign efforts involved in pushing the Henry the Hand program. I just have to ask you, where does the financial support come from to do all this?
Well, as long as you don't tell my wife, I'll tell you.
She's not listening, is she?
No, I hope not.
Okay.
No,
there's keep that MP3 player away from her.
There's a Henry the Hand Foundation I have created in the hopes that we would garner some grant money or some funds and resources on a consistent basis to help basically support the website, support the program, so we can give this away to every preschool, daycare, child in the country at their young ages so they can learn correctly. That hasn't been as successful. We've had some intermittent contributions modestly over the past 7 years, but we help support the program, help defray the cost for the stickers, tattoos, magnets, shirts, what we call them reinforcement tools, and there's the animated video. We sell those for a modest fee to try to defray some of the costs.
Of course.
And then otherwise it's personal contribution, and we have volunteers who help as well.
In the news, we're hearing reports of the resurgence of diseases that we thought had been eradicated, including polio even. What's causing this? Is it a lack of vaccines, a lack of vaccination in general, different mutated strains of these diseases, or what? You know, and what about this avian bird flu scare we're hearing about? It just sounds a little paranoid. It sounds like it's crazy.
I think this is reminiscent of the SARS fear a couple of years ago. Media, needs something to scare people. Unfortunately, fear drives people. Scaring people sells news. And when people are afraid, they're more likely to follow orders and commands. So I don't know. The media is quite a different animal, I would say. The fear factors are there always will be mutating viruses. Well, the vaccines will always be behind, as we've seen multiple times, whether it's polio, which has been fairly effective. Smallpox has been very effective. But you have the MMR, you have the flu vaccine, You have others that are just behind. They're always behind. And the only reason time they help you is after you've inoculated yourself. So if you can prevent the primary inoculation of the disease by not putting your finger in your eyes, nose, and mouth, there won't be any need for the vaccine because you haven't contaminated yourself. And that's for the respiratory tract. There's foodborne illness, which is another issue, which is the diligence of cleaning and preparing and temperature for food, which helps. But there always will be mutations and viruses. And this bird flu is a scare tactic in a sense.
I have one follow-up question on this bird flu scare, and I call it a scare because I think the chances are highly unlikely that I'm going to get bird flu. How much of this is perpetuated by the institutionalized mechanisms towards research and research dollars?
Yeah, big pharma. You're talking about big pharma.
I mean, am I off base there?
It just seems like
there should be an element at play in there.
It's an interesting thing because a lot of people have commented to me, and because of what I'm doing as far as teaching simple human behavior to prevent disease, the comment I hear repeatedly is, this sort of goes up against big pharma, if you will, who wants to sell vaccines, sell antivirals, sell antibiotics, whether they need them or not. I mean, that's the question. So I'm sure that it does in the face of many pieces of research, not even research. Research is something different, but marketing and product sales.
Okay.
There clearly it will be resistance there because, you know, if this catches on, and people don't put their finger in their eyes, nose, and mouth, you know, starting at about age 5 to 7, when they are much more cognizant and aware of certain behaviors, there'll be a significant drop-off of disease, of respiratory illness, be it flu-like illness, because flu-like illness is the biggest problem. You know, strep will drop off, all those pieces, types of illnesses. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to think that there's a true underground current going on, but there clearly are, you know, sort of the conspiracy type theory of, gee whiz, if not that we're going to, you know, stamp out disease altogether, because we're not going to change. Humans are humans. I mean, we're not engines, and we have emotions and feelings, and we respond and react to things. So there'll still be lots of illness around to be treated. But the fear factor is definitely get a flu shot today, and it keeps you from getting the flu. And the answer is that is inaccurate. Get a flu shot today will potentially mitigate or reduce your own body's reaction to the flu if you inoculate yourself with the flu virus. So again, keep your fingers out of your eyes, nose, and mouth, and you won't catch the flu unless you happen to be in a very rare circumstance and people are very sick and sitting across the table from you, and it just happens.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, you're safe.
Those are great perceptions that I'm sure myself, as well as listeners, just don't think about periodically. They think the flu shot is a cure-all, and now I'm safe to walk and do whatever I want to do.
Right. Yeah, just watch people.
Getting back to specifically the Henry the Hand, what's the latest? What's new and exciting for the program, its adoption, and are you receiving any new endorsements for the program?
We actually haven't really pursued new endorsements, to tell you the truth, but there's lots of interest around the world, quite honestly. And I'd say the most recent interest is geared up from Canada, from a lot of the public health initiatives in Canada. Canada seems to be much more prevention-oriented in their approach from a public health perspective than we seem to be here in the States. We seem to be more reactive in the States, and we're selling bioterrorism and things of that sort. And it's when you talk to the public health officials in the States, some of them that I've interacted with, they're not geared up. They're stretched out and thinned out trying to prevent bioterrorist attacks. At some point, they have inadequate funding to do that as well, and inadequate staffing, and it's a little chaotic, actually. So I think we could probably help them a little bit by giving them a program that's very simple, self-explanatory, that they can just reference, and they don't have to teach it. They just have to help, you know, if you will, spread the word, not the germs, in a sense. So that would help them quite a bit, I think, and the public health. But it's different than in private practice.
Well, related to the program and the critical points, have we missed anything that you would additionally like to convey to the listeners about Henry the Hand program?
I think that the program is really for the people. It's really for everybody to access and to look at the internet, the website, and use it for your purpose of teaching and to send it to a friend. It's visual driven. It's multimedia, visual driven. There's some music, activities where you require some coordination of coloring and then communicating about it. So it's, I'd say go to the website, listen to the songs, watch the video, and you'll never forget it.
Wonderful. Doc, I want to thank you for being on the show. Let me shake your hand.
All right, thanks.
And then after we're finished, I'll go wash my hands.
I'm a champion hand washer. I'm okay. See my button? Yeah. Oh, you guys can't see my button out there. But
well, it is a button. I'll attest to that. It's been a pleasure having you on, and I wish you continued success with the Henry the Hand program. To learn more about the Henry the Hand program, I suggest you visit Henry's special website, www.henrythehand.com. And I would add this point. As you visit the website, consider making a contribution, a donation to the foundation to keep this wonderful work in place. Well, that's my show for today. I'm your host, Gary Puckett, for theflypod.com. And again, my guest has been Dr. William Sawyer, MD. I'd like to remind you that through our website, you can send us your comments about today's show. Let us know what you think. Email us at shout@theflypod.com. Now, I promised earlier to play the Henry the Hand theme song, so here it is. Listen closely to the words. The lyrics tell the story.
I know a guy named Henry the Hand. Spreads hand washing all over this land. Teaches how hands can spread disease. Wash your hands, won't you please?
Hand wash, hand wash, hand wash. You and I carry hand wash.
Henry is armed with his four-part trick. Wash your hands before eating so you don't get sick. Don't call for sneeze into your hands. Or put your fingers in your eyes, nose, mouth, he commands.
Hand wash, hand wash, hand wash. Doing that here, hand wash.
Help spread the word, not the germs. Wash your hands, you know the terms. Wash them any time they get dirty. Listen to Henry and spread the word.
Hand wash, hand wash, hand wash. Doing that Henry hand wash.
Henry teaches how to do the hand wash. To keep you from getting sick, by gosh. You will learn about how germs do spread. Make you sick and land in bed.
Hand wash, hand wash, hand wash. Doing that here, hand wash.
Join Henry's hand washing team. Be a champion hand washer is what we mean. You can tell all your friends at school about Henry's four hand awareness rules.